Okay, so let's start with some introductions, just for the record. So, hello everyone, my name is Colton Wansittler, and I am the Interim Assistant Director for the Writing Center at MSU.
Oh, I'm Dr. Wonderful Faison. People call me Dr. Wonderful. I am the Chair of the English Department at Langston University.
Grace?
Yeah, I'm Grace Pregent, Associate Director at the Writing Center at MSU.
I'm Sharik Botex. I'm a graduate writing consultant and a graduate coordinator at the Writing Center at MSU.
And I am Nicholas Bonani, and I am also a graduate coordinator and consultant at the Writing Center at MSU.
Wonderful.
Yes. Wait, you were just making a comment. That doesn't happen often.
I'll make sure to use great. I tend to use wonderful a lot, so I'll use great in this context to avoid confusion. So we do have a couple different categories of questions that we want to ask you today. I believe you have received a list of questions, correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we'll just start at the beginning and start with some context questions. So the first question is, when did you work at the center and who was on the leadership team when you were there?
Okay, so I worked there 2014 to 2000. I really worked there all 4 years. I did the first two because I was on the 5-year program, even though I got out in 4. So I did the first two, but I never left. Like, I worked there over summer, as you know, Colton, even when I was teaching, where I pulled other hours. So for 4 years, I would say 2014 to 2018.
Perfect. And who was on the leadership team?
Was there a leadership team? I know how that sounds, but I don't think there was one. I mean, we had things, but I don't remember anything specific called the leadership team where it had things that it had to do. So I don't actually think that was in existence when I was tutoring full time there. I don't remember conversations about it. So maybe there was one and y'all renamed it, but other than that, not to my knowledge.
I guess I can also ask, like, who the directors and associate directors.
Ah!
Who was?
Okay.
No, that's okay. Who were the?
I can answer. Yeah. Okay. So.
You're right. You don't have.
To. Yeah. Yeah, so Trixie, I mean, I thought you were talking about stuff with grad students, because we did a lot as grad students, you know, so I was like, oh, it's a graduate student leadership team. Trixie, obviously, in her current capacity, Diana Baldwin, before she moved on, for the first couple years. Then Jill came in for a year. For like the first 3 years, it was just Trixie and Diana. And then like Joe came in during that like last year, because I remember I was ABD at the time. So that's who was there.
Perfect. So when you were at the center, what locations were on campuses? Which ones did you work in? Where, like, what were their location, like the spaces?
Yeah, I worked in Bessie Hall, obviously. I worked in South Neighborhood. I was a graduate coordinator for South Neighborhood, so I got big ups for South Neighborhood. And then I did that weird thing with Lyman Briggs for like one semester and decided that was not for me. So those are the...
What was that thing? That doesn't exist.
No, I'm going to tell you what that thing was. That thing was Lyman Briggs needs to come up with its own tutors and its own writing program. That's what that was. And they were like, hey, Writing Center people, come and get them to, like, write. Like, I had to meet with these highly intelligent students, because when you're in Lyman Briggs, you're like these special students or something. I had to meet with these special students in their like dorm area, and they were all cantankerous and ornery and over it. And I was cantankerous and ornery and over it with them because they had to write about like nuclear weapons and technology. So it was like technology and writing, and they had to write things. It was problematic. Like Trixie will tell you that there's a reason that she pulled me out of that space. I told her she had to. So there were two things I told her. No Lyman Briggs and no whatever that summer thing is that we do over the summer when they're like controlling you and you can't leave. You've got to stay here. You always got to smile. I'm not that type of person. So yeah. But those were the spaces.
Okay. I know the Lyman Briggs pilot was a thing. It happened and it no longer...
Oh, thank God. It no longer exists.
Oh, it's gone. Yeah.
I don't know how long it was there for or not. It was,
it left shortly after you did. Wonderful.
Oh, it's my fault. Well, I'm happy to admit it.
Not fault. It was all of you, so thank you.
No, okay, good.
That was a positive change that you helped initiate.
That I helped initiate.
Okay, and then, so you worked in Bessie, you did Lyman Briggs for a minute, Holden. What were the other neighborhoods at that time?
Ah, that's a good question.
Whatever you can remember.
Yeah, and it's been so long. Also considering where I was too. You know, for some reason, and I think it's because I simply didn't work there, I have no clue. I mean, I know a lot of them were at the dorms. You know what I mean? So I know a lot of them were in those dorm neighborhoods, but I never really got out of South.
That is A-okay. Again, just trying to grab some context, you know?
Yeah.
All right, and so the last question in the context category is, like, what services did the Writing Center offer while you were there? So
okay. Yeah, so we had the tutoring. We had three specific time slots. You had 25, you had an hour, and then you had 2 hours. Now, I don't believe in the neighborhoods because of the shortness that we had. I don't believe that a two-hour option was an option. I think that was just the Bessie thing. But we had that. We brought down our little bucket of toys, you know, the Tupperware? You know, the Tupperware box of toys that you go down with the markers and stuff. And we had the computer thing out there and the little vest with the key that they give us, you know, that type of stuff. So a few little trinkets and whatnot, and people would come in. You either would have appointments or someone would make one, you know. And just like with anything, you had your busy times and you had your times that were kind of in a lull.
Great. Did you participate in writing groups or anything like that while you were at MSU?
Right. We did have writing groups. That occurred. No, I did not. I did not until I was working on the perspectives for my dissertation.
Gotcha.
Then the writing groups became highly beneficial.
Yeah. I feel like they're beneficial to both parties at that point.
Yeah, they are. So yeah.
Well, thank you for that section, and we'll go on to the gathering story part.
Okay. I'm happy to do this section, if you would like. So under this section, we have a few different questions. The first one is, when we went big. When you think of the Writing Center at MSU's history, what comes to mind?
When I think of the Writing Center and MSU's history, what comes to mind?
If it helps, we had some follow-up questions under that, some examples.
Yeah, well, I think I have something that came to mind. And I would say a dogged pursuit in service of students, even though very flawed. So I would say that's the history of it, is that it really does work towards serving the students, but that approach at times can be flawed if you don't know who you're not considering.
I was going to ask the follow-up question, flawed how, but I think we're responding to it there. If you don't know who you're
considering. Yeah, well, in my time there, as Colton may know, in my time there, I was big on let's find out how we respond to students who are being, who are using racist or racial rhetoric or undertones in their writing. I'm not sure we've ever actually gotten to how a tutor is supposed to respond to that. I'm still interested in that and still look for that. So that was one of the things. Pushing towards having a language or linguistic diversity statement, pushing towards changing mindsets about whom we accept and why and treat and why we don't. You know, because I was like, no matter what, the writing center is in the institution, which is racist and sexist and classist and homophobic, and it's situated within that. So there are going to be aspects of that within the writing center, no matter what. So this is what I mean. But sometimes it's hard to hear from these particular voices that it's still not quite right. I mean, I think as humans, we seek for perfection. You know, we want to have the best writing center. We want it to not have any problems. And I think that at times might have been hard to hear. You know, from everybody involved. It was hard for me to say. Right, so.
I struggle in our interviews. I want them to turn into just this dialogue, and I want to talk about the language statement and these things. And like, Grace, you're conducting an interview, and we have questions that we got to focus on. But thank you. Thank you for your answers. Wonderful. They've been great so far.
No problem.
Can you recall any outreach programs or significant events the center had created or was involved in during this time? I know you were alluding to the language statement rollout, but
We also, and the language statement thing came at the end, and I was kind of out of it, and I was kind of upset with the conversation. And you know, I was in my own place. You know where you are when you're in that place. Because you've been there, so you know, some of you have been there before or headed to that place now. Those conversations didn't start off right, and they started off wrong, because they started off with, why are we doing this? And there was nothing more upsetting to me in that moment. You know, like, are you kidding me? So on that one. On the other thing, we did have an outreach coordinator at the time, who was to do outreach with, and you could come up with your ideas of what does outreach in the community do? What does the writing center look like in the community aspect? So we did have an outreach coordinator at the time. I'm not sure how much I remember like doing outreach stuff. Now, over the summer when we had the Grandparents University, that rocked. That was pretty cool, because I think, once again, it's in service to the community. However, of course, wonderful being wonderful pointed out serious, obvious, visible issues with race and class that were occurring. Like, everybody was old. Well, everyone was white, okay, almost, except one person, right? I was like, and I know that there were grants and stuff like this. I'm like, but this is what I kept pointing out to them all the time. Why does this one racial color just seem to be the one that always shows up? There's something's going on. So, but that was a great thing over summer. Like, it was beneficial. That's why I wanted more racial diversity, because it was actually really beneficial to those kids. They had fun. They made a lot of things. You got to see where they were really talented. Like, it was great fun, which is why I kind of wanted more students to experience that.
I was going to ask, do you think, I'm not sure if you said this, was it an approach in the advertising that you felt could have been changed to perhaps improve the reach of where the program was?
Let me be honest, we have never been good. Well, at least the time that I was there, MSU was really bad with that. Like, we would do a lot of stuff, but I'm not sure we ever advertised it right. Like, there would just all of a sudden be this thing that we were doing, and it was like, oh, you know, but it would be this great thing that we were doing. Like, even Trixie had her, like, queer rat or something conference, which I know, you know, I always connect Trixie to the Writing Center. So something she does, I'm like, so the Writing Center did, right? But it was almost like, I feel like I heard this by word of mouth, but not because I saw it somewhere. I remember Trixie telling us about it when she was teaching us in a class, right? Like, I didn't see it necessarily somewhere, or the flyers came too late. Even when I was sending out, invitations for people to apply for the writing project thing, like, the numbers were wrong. I thought I had to do 200 flyers. I had to do 2,000, you know, and I was up there on a Saturday for 8 hours because I committed, you know, I took it. I'm the one that got the number wrong, even though y'all told me 200, but that's okay. So I think our ways of promoting things, at least in the 4 years that I was there, I've always thought we could probably do a better job. So I'm sure that was part of it. And then there's this community promoting, right, as well. So, and when you have to tell people who are impoverished have to be told sooner. So they have the time to save up the money. Right. So if you normally start the advertisement 6 months before, for if you're going to reach out to an impoverished community, they probably need to know about a year out and continue to be bombarded and reminded. That's just the way poverty works, you know.
Thank you, because I think it's something good for us to hear. And, you know, even as a center, as we try to do better and try to improve upon things, like, just even hearing this kind of critique from someone who's been there and who has thought about these things can help us, you know, like, improve that. And so that way we know in the future how to better work on our advertising and stuff to get everybody involved that should be.
Yeah, because I'll be honest, I always thought, now that I'm at the institution that I'm at now, and when I tell you the culture shock in the lack of resources, like, there's lack of resources, and then there's lack of resources, right? The culture shock and lack of resources, and how that stymies the mind. I try to tell people, I'm still on the conversation with some of the people about, we're actually having conversations about how much grammar should be gone over when they come to the tutors. Because this is the demographic that we're working with. This was not a conversation that we held at MSU. How much grammar should we go over? Like, are you all, I mean, literally in our training modules, here are sentence fragments, this, right? Like, we would say that's anti-writing center pedagogy. Come to my writing center though, and it's not. Right, the severe lack of resources that we have to accommodate students, and I've always felt like you all have so much resources, sometimes too much, right, that I'm not sure they're all being used as effectively as they could be, because you all have access to, so I've seen it before, there's so much stuff that they'll get that sometimes it's like, what are we going to do with this? I don't know, put it over there. Right, like, there's like that atmosphere in the writing center, right? It like has excess. So yeah, that's what I would say. Look at how you all are doing that, because Grandparents University is really cool, and a lot of children should be able to experience that.
Thank you. That image of excess, I think really rings to me. Then the next question is, what is your, I mean, we worded it, what is your favorite MSC Writing Center story? If you have a story, when you think of the center, it comes to mind.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's a favorite story or it, or it's more about the stories, about the stories that I would hear in the writing center. I think that that's what would be, what would be it. The things that we would laugh about, the things at times that you would be told, you know, or you would hear about, you'd be like, wait a minute, what's going on in the writing center? Right? Like, it was fun. I mean, for me, it was the stories about the stories. I mean, both of you were there. It was all kinds, I mean, all kinds of drama and angst, right, that was going on. But now that I'm outside of it, I'm like, God, what a drama and angsty-filled place. But it was exciting, and it was exuberant, and people were close, and there were cliques, and there were people who loved each other, and there were people who hated each other. And it just made me think this is very much like what a community is. You know, so when I think of the MSU Writing Center, I'm like, it is very much a community. And not in that, like, nice, rosy, sugar-coated way with the community and family, but in that very raw way. We could come together when we had to come together, but we fought, we had our differences. There are people that are glad they'll never see one another again. Okay, but if I gotta talk about the Writing Center, it's a community. It's a neighborhood within its own self.
The stories about the stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's definitely important to mention and note. Your sense of community, and I know this is not in the context questions we have, but we read one of your piece in Anna Trevino, the Race, Retention, Language, and Literacy, the Hidden Curriculum of the Writing Center. And I think in there you guys talk about that some of the ideas are attached to what you're saying, in my opinion, to what you're saying now, but the idea of home and the Writing Center and the different feelings and the way the, like, cultural identity and race tie into that. So I'm just wondering, like, How did you find yourself communicating those types of messages in a way that transcended out beyond MSU's Writing Center, I guess? Like, what did you take from those experiences that you're talking about now to kind of morph that out into something that I think people in different Writing Center spaces are looking at? And how did you process that? Like, were you working at the Writing Center at the time? What?
I mean, I was. It's really weird because I never thought I'd be a scholar about race. Yeah, I just wanted to teach kids how to write. You know, I've never thought I'd be a scholar about race. And so, but, you know, a lot of my research at that time and publishings at that time came from my experiences in that writing center. Whether they were good, were really, really bad. And I won't lie that I had some really bad experiences in that writing center, self-inflicted and other people inflicted, right? Just to be honest, right? So a lot of my research comes out of that. I tell people all the time, I write best when I'm angry. Everything you've ever, if you've ever read anything from me, I was angry, you know, and I was upset at the injustice of something, something as I saw as a true injustice. And what I think one of the most, honestly, it's very inhumane, is to simplify really complex things like family, like home, right? Like community, like simplify these things into loving things when we know that people have abusive families, or we know the complex dynamics, you know, that can happen if you just have multiple siblings, because every parent has a favorite. They lie and say they don't. We all know they do. Right, we all know they do. Right, I say that too. I'm the favorite. Right, so that's what it was to me, is that everything to me at that time seemed like they were being so simple. And I thought that they were doing it to be obstructionist. I thought it was an obstructionist tactic. I was like, you can't believe it's that simple. Well, the Writing Center is different than an institution because it's like home. Home is an institution, right? Like, I would be frustrated by the oversimplification, and I read it as obstructionist like rhetoric. And I don't actually think it was obstructionist. I think it's a human need to make things simple, to make complicated things very, very simple, right? And we're in a field where you have to define what's different about yourself to be able to be considered valid and a thing, right? So, well, if the institution's racist, how is it the Writing Center racist? Right. Well, you know, because we do things with home and family and community, like all three of these spots aren't racist or can't harbor that. So that's what it was. It's matured now because I realized that my lens was narrow. I realized that the majority of work about Writing Centers is about predominantly white institutions. Now I'm questioning why in the world no one's listening to what HBCUs or Hispanic serving institutions are saying and how that will change the discourse around what we do actually when we tutor. Because when I say we are really looking at grammar and this, that, and the other, and we're doing common midterms with grammar and this, that's because of our demographic. I didn't come here with that type of ideology. I thought it was useless until you recognize that there are some populations that fundamentally haven't been given the tools. They've been failed. And if we don't recognize that as tutors or instructors, wherever you are, then we'll fail them more by not giving them the tools because we're like, well, you're supposed to have them, and now I'm not going to teach them to you, and so I'll continue this classist racist oppression of you. Right? So what do you do when there's someone who comes in your Writing Center that needs those tools? You're gonna be like, well, you know, we care about higher order concerns. Like, sometimes that's how a lot of Writing Center theory came off to me. We care about, you know, about, like, things like that. People that I respect. I love Writing Center scholars. These are my friends, right? These are people that I know. But they also know that this is how I feel about it. Stop making it all roses and, you know, tell us about what we did well. That you did it well. That here you do this well. But here are all these other things. You have to work on that. Did that answer your question?
No, most definitely.
The next question I have is, during your time at the center, did any significant world, political, social, cultural, or university events occur?
Yes. My entire life changed the minute Donald Trump was elected. And when I say my life, I mean my physical psychology. Those last 2 years fundamentally changed. I didn't know how to see people. I certainly didn't know how to see my white, quote, liberal friends. You know, I was just annoyed at what everyone was saying. And this isn't about me, when that happened, I probably went to being the gayest I ever been. I hadn't been to like a club in, you know, 10, 15 years, you know. I was like, you know, 38 at the time. I had to go to a club and dance and do what gay people do because I was so worried about this guy, right? And so, but that changed my outlook on everything. And then the Larry Nassar stuff is going down here, right? So it, those things altered your perception of a lot of things. Right. A lot of my perceptions got changed, which I thank MSU for. And sometimes I, you know, wish it hadn't occurred. My perceptions of the North changed, you know, being, you know, I was born and raised below the Mason-Dixon line in Washington, D.C., and all my experiences really from the South, never really been way up north. That, you know, I thought y'all were better with the race thing. What I found out is that it's bubble wrapped, you know, in this really weird, best way I can describe it is taking a cab to MSU. Taxi driver's like, where are you going? Going to MSU. Oh, you're the cook? The cook of MSU. Right, like, so that kind of stuff. You know, that I, honestly, that was the oddest. I would have never got that in the South, believe it or not. Like, I would have never gotten that. But I got that here, and that was odd to me. You can't see a black person, you know, not only as, like, not only could you not see me as an instructor, you couldn't even see me as a student. That's what that comment read to me like. Even though I'm walking in there with a backpack, with books, all these other visual markers. So, yeah. But wait, what was the question? I want to make sure I hit it. I didn't.
You did. No, you did. Significant world, political.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
You got it. Trump, master. I mean, we were trying to ask here, you know, we don't want to think of the writing center's history or story in isolation, right? It's much more complex than that. We are, like, deeply implicated in social and political and cultural structures. So we're trying to think about those moments. And the second part of this question was, if you can remember, how did the center, like, respond to those events, or react to those events, if they did?
So for a couple days, you know, I'll speak with them separately because the reaction was separate. So after the presidential election, for a couple days, it's like ain't nobody really know what to do. And it was felt, like, at least for me, in that entire building where the writing, it's like, did nobody know what to do? Of course, and no offense to anyone on the panel, but I feel like all the white people were like, what are the black people going to do? Right? I felt like they were all like, oh, God. You know, I had, like, white people, like, hug me. It was very weird. Right? Are you okay? And so there was this weird reaction that was happening by, like, everyone, where everyone was trying to figure out. It's like everyone was trying to reposition themselves because it's like ain't nobody know who they were or who they thought they were. So it was this weird, because you wanted to know, did you vote for this dude? Because Michigan went red, right? But American culture, you don't ask nobody who they voted. Like, that's rude. You know, like, you don't do that. But that's what you started. You could sense people doing that. You could sense people looking around. And you would sense people start to really want to listen to the whispers in the hallway. So then you heard, you know, faculty members whispering about this other faculty member that they knew, right, had voted for him. And this is why that faculty member took down Facebook. And you're just hearing about all of these things. And people are like, I'm getting rid of, like, all these racist people on my Facebook. It's really weird. Right, and so all of that happening, that purging, led to a lot of silence in the writing center, and it's weird because looking back on it, it felt like people kind of started to huddle up with people that they just knew and trusted, and I think it had a negative impact on the writing center. Like, we still did our jobs, but something seemed different for a little bit after the immediacy of his election. Something seemed very, very different after that occurred, with just how people were reacting. So you had to deal with it. And then after that, ain't nobody talk about it, which was an institutional problem. I even asked my students in class, y'all understand what's going on with the vote? Do y'all even understand how this works? Do you have any? No clue. No clue. It, like, nobody talked about it. People dealt with it internally, and then nobody talked about it. But you couldn't trust nobody to talk about it, because if you talk to the wrong person, somebody's mad. I know I was mad, so I understand if nobody wanted to talk to me about it. I put that out there, because I know how upset I was, and I had to go to school the next day. You know, so, but then we didn't do anything about it, which was a failing. And the response was, well, why don't you create something? That's always a response. Why don't you do this thing, right? Oh, put the burden on me. Right? Like, that's how you put the burden on me to find a solution to how you all should respond to the fact that you have some really damaged, that there are some very vulnerable populations right now in the Writing Center who are scared. And two of them run it. Right? Diana and Trixie. So that was hard. With Larry Nassar, that Larry Nassar thing came with the Me Too thing, and so then that became really weird because then it was about advocacy and let's advocate and how can we reach out to people who need to be heard, you know. And I was all about that, except something felt really fraudulent about it. I know how that sounds. Something felt really faddish about it. Like, I couldn't believe these people. I remember one time I had actually spoken at the Green Door, which is a bar in East Lansing, you know, because all these people, they're like, this is a safe place, and, you know, how about we wear this or whatever, and I was like, I just don't believe y'all. I don't believe you're that upset, right? I don't believe, it just doesn't ring true to me, and that's my, personal experience, but it felt faddish, because I don't know if any actual real things change. You all can tell me, because I left shortly after. You know, thank God I was graduating, but I'm not sure fundamental things change. I mean, I still talk to a couple people who go there. I'm very close with Floyd Council and whatnot. And so I just wonder at times if things have changed up there in response to that. Because people were scared and nobody did nothing. Nobody did nothing to people who were scared, or for people who were really scared.
I don't know if anyone here wants to respond to Wonderful on that last one. I know Colton and Nick, you've been here longer than Sharik and I are new this past year, but I don't know if you want to, or if Sharik, if anyone wants to respond to Wonderful. We are at the end of this section and we're about to move into the next one. Leave the question out there. Has anything changed?
You know, I think a couple things have changed. I without getting too much into your interview, you know, I remember something just last year happening, you know, where, was it last year? Maybe the year before. Sometime shortly after I remember you leaving, that there was a speaker coming to campus, and there were, like, these protests, and there was an email sent out on behalf of the Writing Center to all of our staff that was like, you know, if you want to protest, you won't lose pay for it. Like, we're still going to support you financially for you to go up to this protest. And so I felt like that was something that was needed, you know, that was prompted based on these events that we had experienced. And I felt like it was the right step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
no, that's great to hear, quite honestly. That's great to hear.
Yeah, that's what I got, you know, that's what I connected to what you were saying. But I agree, like, the whole Trump thing, it was weird. You know, we were in the space, we were together, but we were separate.
Yeah, we were, because we just didn't know how to. No. I'm glad that time and distance can heal some things, you know, because I left in such a furor that I didn't know if I'd ever recover. Like, literally, I didn't know if I ever recovered. So I'm glad that time and space and we were in a moment. We still are. I think people are still upset. I'm still upset.
Oh, yeah.
For those of us that are still upset, but it's not the rawness that was there. It's not raw.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think from my perspective, I remember just being shell shocked and not understanding how that could happen, and then having a loss of trust for others, because as you said, you can ask people, but you don't really know that they didn't vote for him, even if they, and so I think that's why so many people just got quiet,
mm-hmm.
because there was just such like this, like, what the hell's going to happen?
Yeah.
And now, of course, we were watching it all happen, and it's disgusting and horrible. And hopefully, and I think a lot more people have been able to refine their voice and be able to speak up against these things. But I know immediately following it, like, just, I love that you said I had to go to a gay bar. And just do gay things. Just lean into the stuff that he was so mad right. for. Lean into it.
Love that. I love that. That might be a high point of all the interviews. Well, we're about to move into the next section here, which is on organizational culture. And Nick or Sharika, do either one of you want to sort of take the lead on this section?
Sharika, if you'd like to.
Nick, I'll let you take this one, and then I'll help you teamwork it.
Sounds good.
Okay, so why don't you go with number one?
Thing that happens in class when you get bumped, the reader bumps to you and it's your turn and you're up and you have to find out exactly where you're at. So we're moving out of the organizational culture, you're saying, Grace?
Yeah, no, we're in that one.
I was going to say, okay. So we're asking now, what was one key value or practice that has been or was a constant at the Writing Center?
Value or practice? Yeah. I think a key value is making sure that a student's paper said what they said, what they wanted it to say, not what you wanted it to say. And I think that that's still a key value there in ensuring that students' papers are good, but that they give the message that the student wanted, intended all along.
Yeah. I'm just going to hop back really quick because I know that that's something I've always struggled with. And when you said when a student has racist or supremacist style like rhetoric in their writing, and it's like that line of how do you change that but not like change the voice of the, like, how do you balance that line?
I have found that sometimes it starts with a very simple question. Are you intending to be racist? I need to know where you're coming from. Because if you're intending to be racist, one, I'm not going to help you write this paper. You can find another tutor who's willing to do it because we have the ability to do that, or at least at MSU, that's another thing that I value about them. If you're not comfortable working with a client, you weren't going to work with that client, right? So that's another thing that I'm MSU is very conscious of that, and so I'm very happy about that. But it starts with that first question. And we don't ask it because we're actually afraid of the answer.
Yeah,
because the answer may not be no. Like, that's the truth. Maybe they are intending to be racist and insidious or and incendiary. That's what I mean, racist or incendiary or classist or sexist. Maybe they're trying to do that. So that's the first question. And then you have to go from there. Because if it's no, then the other stuff comes easy. Oh, okay, well, because it reads this way to me because blah, blah, blah. If it's yes, harder decisions have to be made.
Yeah.
How you go about making those decisions, harder decisions. If somebody says, yeah, completely and totally, mean to be racist. I really actually believe that minorities are the problem with America. Now you might want to encourage them to read some research. Right? But we all are smart enough to know research. We know that there's enough research on both sides, right? That have actually been published in credible journals or this, that, and the other, right? Like, and I think that's why we don't do it. But if you ask me what's the first step, do you know you're being sexist? Do you mean to do that? I just want to know. Because if you do, I'm going to say that's fine. In the sense that that's what you intend to do. Not saying that it's fine because I'm not sure the impact of what these words will do if your teacher is not white and male and heterosexual and doesn't believe, but also believes what you believe. You're banking on a lot That's a lot of variables to bank on, because I don't think every white heterosexual male I see is racist. Right, so, but I'm still interested in that, and I would like to say that I hope that there's a tutor who's brave enough, a writing center that's brave enough. I can honestly say we don't get that here. Not the racist stuff. Now, the chauvinistic stuff, we'll get that. I mean, HBCUs are still pretty homophobic, and they're still pretty heterosexist, okay? But the racist thing, that just doesn't occur here, you know? But it still comes with asking, you know, why are you being homophobic? Why are you being transphobic? Why are you... Mm-hmm. And it takes courage. So I guess what I'm saying is, I hope the MSU Writing Center tutors have the courage to ask that question, and I hope that the directors have the fortitude to support them, come what may. Because we know what happens when you start accusing certain people of being racist.
Right.
You know. So that's my hope.
Yep. Thank you. So our next question, and I think you've kind of talked about this a little bit, but how would you describe the quality or the spirit of the center? I know you said it's like a community, but like a family, like they're going to fight sometimes, but they're there for each other.
Yeah, they're there enriching, you know. I mean... Vibrancy is the best word that I can come up with, even though I don't know if there's something of vibrant quality. I mean, I don't even know if that's a thing. But that's what I tend to think of. I mean, but when you think of communities that are living and thriving and sustaining and growing and moving forward, it's because they're vibrant, right? And I think that that's what I think of with the Writing Center, you know. It's vibrant. I'll tell anybody who has ever wanted to work there, you'll never lack for something to do. There'll always be interesting conversations. The tediousness will always be the back-to-back-to-back-to-back appointments, as we know. You know, if you could just breathe. But it's very vibrant there, and it's growing, and people are doing things, and they're trying to change things, and that's fun. You know, at the end of the day, that's really fun. It's not a stagnant place. And you have directors who, by and large, will support what you're doing, even if they don't necessarily agree that what you're doing is occurring in the Writing Center. You know, I support Trixie to the end because she let me do my research. Never believing that there was any racism going on, you know. I'm not even sure she fully supported, like, you know, that this could happen, but she said, you need to do this, and I'm going to support you in your need to do this. Because at the end of the day, it'll still teach me something about the Writing Center. So I would say that, you know, that people are supportive of the things that you want to do. And it's always vibrant, and it's always fun. And I think that that's why people are there. I think that's why when people have a break between class, they don't go home. They go to Bessie.
I guess
it's fun.
Yeah.
Like, a couple snacks. It was fun. It was a fun time.
Yeah. I agree with that. And I think, like, thinking about, like Nick said, you had already responded to some elements of this question, but I guess now that you're in a professional career and you moved on to the next phase of your academic life, what would you say are things about the quality of the Writing Center at MSU, or about that sense of the community that you talked about, that you used to transfer over to the next phase of your academic career, that have impacted you or influenced you there?
Well, you know, some of it came from people and some of it came from the skills I picked up, right? So obviously a lot of the work that I did, and some of you all do as graduate coordinators, right, as neighborhood, you know, coordinators, leaders of something like that, So it gave me a lot of skills in terms of what I needed to prepare me for an administration position. If I chose to go after one, I didn't think I'd choose to go after one this early, but it certainly prepared me for those things. In terms of experiences, I'll say this from a student perspective. It's always very interesting when you get on the job market, right? And you go to work in an entirely different place where you don't know nobody, right? Because that's where it is. And somebody reminds you of that somebody in grad school who you couldn't navigate back then, but you learned something and now you know how to navigate this person because of, and I learned a lot about how to navigate people at MSU. Some of my navigation was really good. Some of it was horrific. Okay. Some of it was really, really bad. But when you start to see that again, you learn from that. And you're like, wait, okay, I've done this. I've been here before. I've done that. I can approach this differently now because it's not a new experience. And that's first happening, right? I'm more prepared for this. And so it prepared me for those things that you face. Like even as a teacher, it prepares you for those things. We have very interesting students at Langston University in the sense of, you know, they're survivors. They've spent their entire lives like surviving and hustling and having to do that. And that's the skill that they've picked up, okay? It's a horrible skill for the academy, though, right? And learning how to articulate to people how they have to go about being successful in the academy, what skills they can and can't use and why, is something that I actually learned from the Writing Center. You know, how do you be successful in the academy? How do you learn to speak to power? How do you learn about the processes that you need to get the things that you ultimately want out of your academic and professional career? And I really learned a lot of that at the Writing Center by watching how the Writing Center worked and attempted to make deals and everything.
Thank you. See, Nick, I asked that question. We didn't have it on the chart, but now I'll put it back to you because that was a good response. So I'm going to throw the next one back to you.
They've all been good responses.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so just for the sake of time, I think we have, just looking at our list of questions, I think there's a couple that really don't pertain. And a couple that we obviously might know, like when you work at the Writing Center, we use WC Online. So yeah. I don't think we need to question that. But I would love to ask about organizational number three. Please describe the Writing Center's approach to hiring and our onboarding and training. And were there any intentional efforts to recruit staff across disciplines? Like, did you see anything?
Okay. So hiring, then there's staff across disciplines. And was there one more?
There should be, yeah, like onboarding and training, like any thoughts about that or
okay,
things
yeah.
that I remember?
Yeah, I mean, I was on the hiring committee when we actually had hired Joe, who was the associate director right before the two new ones that are in there now. I did some minor snooping to see who's on the Writing Center. And so I was on that committee, and I mean, it was very interesting. Hiring committees are odd, you know. It was very interesting because I'll never forget that there was this one comment that was made, and I was like, why is this bothering me? And we had a set of candidates, and we looked, and we were like, oh no, we can't do this. All these candidates are white. HR will kill us. Right? Affirmative action will kill us. And I just remember thinking, oh my God, how odd that is that the candidates that everyone did you say are the top candidates But there's something wrong with the pool, right? The pool is all, you know, white men or something like that. There's just a general lack of diversity there, and so you have to put it there. And it just felt weird to me, hearing that comment and knowing that, these are the intricacies that you have to go through. I mean, when I'm on the Langston hiring committees here, they're like, yep, you know, we'd love for us to get some more of, like, black scholars. Of course, you can't say that, right, in the job call, because it violates affirmative action. So some very weird things, right, that I thought were happening on the hiring committee. You know, I wanted to look at the job call, right, because there are ways to write job calls that are actually going to attract minority candidates, right? So when I was there, I questioned how we're crafting our job calls, right? Which I think one should always ask, how are we crafting a job call to get the kind of candidates that we want? For the second part, was that onboarding or?
Yeah, so like when you were hired, like what type of training or materials, training. Like did you get a handbook, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, we got what is that handbook that's always used? Norton Guide for Tutors or something? Is that Norton? Bedford, thank you. Bedford Book for Tutors or something. Yeah. So we got that. I take truth, I've never paid one bit of attention to it. I'm not even gonna lie, I just got it and put it down. Because I had been tutoring for 2 years prior at the master's thing. It wasn't I know everything. But it was like, I'm just not, right? Right? So then we had to come in, I think, 2 weeks before the fall semester started, Monday through Thursday, it was like 9 to 3, and Fridays, it was like 9 to 12. Oh, it was ghastly. And so that's what we did. I'm glad that there was training. I'm just saying it was ghastly. That's a lot of hours. I mean, we're students. We want to keep the vacation all the way to the day before, right? So coming back 2 weeks prior was just really annoying. But that was the training, and we went over different things. I seem to remember us doing a lot of community building exercises and not a lot of, like, you know, mock situations or like practical type of stuff. I felt like, Lord, forgive me, Trixie. I always felt like I was a child when I entered the Writing Center. Not that it was trying to infantilize me, but all the colors and the crayons and the crafts. You know, and I'm not that kind of girl. Like, I'm not a craft woman. Like, and so all of these things, I was like, I feel like I'm 12. You know, I was like, why? What is this weird relationship building that we're doing? This is a grown person. I'm a grown person. We don't got to like each other. We just got to work well. Like, this is something adults know. Like, it just felt kiddie to me. That being said, I'm still happy we have training. I wouldn't say we didn't need it. I think we needed more practical things. And I think at times we focused on these abstract understandings of things. I understood. I mean, we're all smart. Trixie wants the Writing Center to be seen as a community-type space, as a home-like space. So she would do community building exercises. That's what she wants her space to be seen as. I'm just saying, personally, I felt like I was 12 years old for like 14 days before the semester. So that was that one. Was there another one? I keep feeling like there was a third one, but no? Or I feel like there was a third one.
Oh, I had jumbled into that. Do you remember if the Writing Center really reached out to other disciplines at the university to hire people?
Cross disciplines. Well, yeah. I mean, my God, when we had 100 tutors, you're still running at a low. You know, you don't have 100 people in English. You don't have 100 people in RAC like that, you know, at the graduate level. I mean, you actually have only a couple of RAC people that you give the Writing Center thing to. So we depend on undergrads more so than we depend, and we don't have the time to cherry pick disciplines. You know, send in your applications as long as what I think what's the main thing, as long as you've completed your basic gen ed, I think, and you've gone through the tutor training course, you're guaranteed the spot. So yeah, we always work across disciplines, had to. And how great that was. Oh my God, that was great. Best part of the Writing Center, working with all those different disciplines and hearing how everybody talks so different and smart and crazy, but like the English people over here talking about, like, not the English people, the RAC people talking about rhetoric and race and words, and the English people talking about books and literature, and the music people are talking about stuff, like all this stuff and all that you do not understand at all, right? But it's all interesting. You know that it's like all smart stuff being said. So yeah, cross discipline, that's the best thing. After working in a writing center with nothing but English people, I love it. English people, but man, we're kind of ornery. We're a little bit ornery and cantankerous. And that's a lot of ornery, cantankery people in one room. So I know I work with them. So yeah, that was the best thing about MSU Writing Center.
Awesome. And I just want to clarify, you said you did not receive a handbook.
No, I received it. I didn't do anything with it. I couldn't tell you where that handbook went after it was placed in my hand.
But it was like, was it like a Writing Center handbook, or was it just like a
book about? No, it was just the Bedford Book of Knives. It was just the Bedford, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, we're actually, side note, we're actually working on a Writing Center specific handbook right now.
This is good. Yeah. I think that's smart. Yeah, I think that's smart.
Very excited about it.
That's actually where this whole interview process came from, was the handbook committee. And developing that and wanting to have our story, and in addition to other things, be a part of the handbook. So that way when someone gets hired, they can see these things and understand the diversity of the Writing Center itself, and, you know, hear all of the previous people who have worked there, their voices, and then, you know, see logistics, like how to log into things and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah, no, I totally get it.
Well, I just wanted to ask our closing questions here.
Okay.
Wonderful. Is there anything else that you'd like to share? We're going to end with that big, you start broad, you end broad, right? Is there anything else that you would like to share about the history of the center or anyone else that we should talk with?
Well, about the history of the center or the center itself, I mean, I will simply say there's no space that I learned more about learning how to be a teacher and learning how to work with students and understand how they see writing than the Writing Center. It's one of the most generative spaces. And I give all credit to Trixie and formerly Diana Baldwin for where they carried the Writing Center from to where it is now. And this is why I remain adamant supporters of them, not just because they're my friends and my mentors, but because I believe in what they do. I believe in the Writing Center and what it does, no matter any of its problems. That's what I want to say, is that I believe in the Writing Center and what it does, and that what it's doing is trying to be better for students.
Thank you. And yeah. Can you think of anyone else who worked at the Writing Center that we should reach out to or speak with? And this could be Writing Center or affiliated with the Writing Center when you were there. So clients, faculty, anybody else you think we should reach out and talk to?
I also don't know who you talk to, but in terms of across discipline, I have one name from you outside of RAC. Her name is Esme Murdoch. She's on my Facebook. God knows I do not know how to, but Trixie should still have her somewhere in the listserv. Trixie knows who Esme is. She was there for a few years. She's now a professor out there in California. So she would be someone who would be good to talk to about it as they remembered it. And also, his name is Blair Proctor. Colmar, you're on my Facebook because you can, like, Facebook steal these people and kind of contact them. I can give you Blair's contact number if you just reach out to me, Colton, at least with your email. But, yeah, Blair Proctor, he was from AAAS. And I'm giving these people because I think that they will speak to you honestly and give you an honest perspective of what, you know, what they saw going on in the history of things. Yeah.
Well, great. Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Yes. No problem. But yeah, Cole, you have my email, right? If you email me, I will get you Blair's information. He's working at Syracuse. You might be able to Google his email.
Okay.
But either way, I just don't know the school that Esme's at. Otherwise, I'd be like, just Google that, right? But if you at least email, I can get you some information that'll get you in contact with them.
Okay. And like you said, we're friends on Facebook, so I should be able to find them on your friend list.
There you go.
But thank you so much. This was awesome.
Thank you. It was good to see you all again. It was good to meet you. I'm glad you're where you want to be, Sharika.
Yeah, I'm grateful. I'm grateful for that. I feel like you had the ECU and MSU path or at least background to some degree. So it feels good, like you said, to be now with Trixie and after being with my ECU community and being in this Writing Center community. So I'm definitely blessed for that. I guess you dropped a lot of knowledge on us. I only had one final question, like what, especially because of all the knowledge you shared and you have moved on, like, but you're still a part of this community, like you said, what is one piece of advice you would give your then Writing Center self or your working in that space, now that you've made it to this point, what is the one piece of advice you would give to yourself, I guess?
Chill the fuck out. Like, I know how that sounds. Whoa. Like, I was really on that race stuff. You know, and I'm an advocate, but, like, there are sometimes I just need to chill, man. Like, and ain't nobody ever tell me, wonderful, chill. I recognize I might have seemed like a bull in a china shop, so I understand that people didn't want to be like, wonderful, chill. I get it, right? But I needed to chill the fuck out, like, literally. And you can put that. You can quote that if you wanted to.
Right.
And because, like I said, it goes back to me saying how much drama and angst and whatnot is in the Writing Center. Because except for, except for Trixie and now you, Grace, and the other associate director, I cannot remember her name. Nobody in there is stable. We all worried about whether or not we're going to get a job. That creates angst. We've been doing this for years. You get this degree and you come out with no job, right? Like, all that is drama and angsty, and everyone's competing, even if you don't want to compete. And so, yeah, a lot of us just needed to chill out. You know, just chill out. So that's what I would tell, you know, myself then. Chill out. Pick the fights you want to fight. You're fighting, like, don't stop fighting the racism and things like that. But, you know, breathe. It's okay to say, I'm not going to do that today. Because I tried to fight it every day. And it wore on me. And it changed my mental state. and it made me very, very, very angry. And like I said, it's taken me 2 years to get past it. And I shouldn't have done that to myself.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thanks, everybody, for letting me be a part of this. And thank you for all the knowledge you shared and the great questions and stuff everybody asked.
Thank you. Let me know if I can ever help in anything else. I'll be happy to, okay?